Okay, then welcome back to the main session. And now we have report back from the breakout sessions on our agenda. And I will hand over to Nick. I think he will give us a summary of what was discussed in group one.
Thank you, Martin. So group one discussed three areas from the proposals. The amounts and primary financial statements, which is tended to be the executive summary, the nature and risks associated with defined benefit plans, and the risk for changes. So the first one, that executive summary of the amounts which are in primary financial statements, this was generally felt to be useful. Although there were a number of observations, I think, which was reassuring from our participants that this is often information that they already get. I think this is because we worked up these requirements in some respects by looking at best practice with a view of trying to bring everyone to the same place. There was a request if we could, again, try and tie this back to individual lines, for instance, in statement of profit or loss. But we heard from a preparer later on in our discussions that this was more difficult to do given their cost allocation systems. The tax information was felt to be, on the deferred tax information was felt to be really useful. And we also heard from users commenting that they would tend to, or generally look at a impact on their valuation of a pension deficit net of tax. So that's important. But also we heard from a preparer who said, questioned how useful it was given, for a global entity, there are many different rates of tax that are blended in to come up with that number. We also had a comment on the disclosures, which related the pension, defined pension plans to the cash flow statement in the example given, and that was felt to be helpful to have that there. Users will help, encouraged by that. So the second set that we looked at, which was around the nature of and risk associated with defined benefit plans, this was an example where there was more judgment required, or the proposals were asking preparers to make more judgment. Set out were some specific disclosure objectives, and then alongside some items described as, although not mandatory, could be considered in terms of meeting those objectives. And this is where we really started to get into the behavioural issues at play here. And so we heard from a pair who said they welcomed the opportunity to generally use judgment in terms of what's disclosed, but the struggle often can be with either with the inevitable discussion with the auditor or the potential liability through not putting information into their financial disclosures. So say we go back to what can be the default position of providing what might be considered immaterial information, but you've covered all the bases. We also had a view this time from a user that perhaps if we are comfortable with our disclosure objectives, and I think generally the sense from users was that the specific disclosure objectives that were set out did capture user needs in this respect, perhaps it's best not to give any examples whatsoever. And that may, one, get us away from the checklist approach, and to actually really encourage judgment in terms of how those specific disclosure requirements are met by preparers. We then got into some discussion about some specific items, having said that, whether they should be on the list or not, and the issue of sensitivity analysis was raised as by way of an example, which I don't think is on that list, and a kind of desire or a sense that is often important to users, and I think mixed opinions whether it should be mandatory or whether it should be included in a list of items that could help fulfill the disclosure objective. And then the third area that we talked about was the effectively the reconciliation, which is described as the reasons for change. And this again is a set out as a mandatory requirement together with some further non-mandatory issues to consider. Again, this was felt to be important. We did spend some time discussing whether this should be a reconciliation for the deficit, the net of the assets and liabilities, which I think is what we have set out in the proposals. And what we heard from users is that actually they'd like to see a reconciliation of the assets and liabilities separately. And again, to try and tie that, always tying that back to what's in the primary statements. And as before, some suggestion that may be difficult to do in all circumstances. So that's a brief summary of what we heard from the group in that respect. If anyone else has anything else further to add, please chip in now.
Okay, thanks, Nick. Thanks, yeah. It's nobody who wants to add something. So then we should move to group number two.
I was just going to add one quick thing, Nick, to your comments about the non-required disclosures. To just make the one suggestion I had was to change the title of it as suggestions as opposed to non-mandatory, because the title non-mandatory, it can skew towards being something that looks like a checklist. Just to think about.
Thanks, Anthony.
Okay, thanks. Anybody else? That seems not to be the case. Then move to Tom, group number two.
Yeah, thank you, Martin. So our group had a spirited discussion on three of the specific disclosure objectives, the ones that appear on slides 37, 43, and 44. These are the expected future cash flows, measurement uncertainties associated with defined benefit plans, and future payments to members of defined benefit plans. And I think I'll do most of it in sort of across the three topics in the interest of conciseness. So there was strong support for having the mandatory specific disclosure objectives in that these should be really helpful. And we were encouraged in that they should give preparers some latitude to deliver useful information more concisely. There was strong support for the expected future cash flows, which is an element of innovation in the actual disclosures and the uncertainties. Some people thought it would be nice to have the tax shield attached to any expected future cash flows. One of the things that arose was that people pointed out that to a significant degree, the expected future cash flows are a function more of the funding valuation and what the trustees of the plan think. And so people wanted more information on the funding valuation, not to exclude the accounting valuation because there was information there too, but they would have liked more on the funding evaluation and seen that linked into those expected future cash flows. So that was, I think, something. And again, that was one of the things they thought they could do latitude to explain that relationship better under the specific disclosure objective. Potentially. With respect to that as well, there is a concern that with respect to the funding valuations, the biggest single difference is in the different discount rates applied to the accounting valuation and the funding valuation, and that some information on the different discount rates and potentially any other major difference between the two might be noted. In general, there were concerns over whether some of the non-mandatory should be in the mandatory class. And in general, I think people's view was that for the quantitative items, that a lot of these were essential. A quantitative item could be a very specific for example, assumption that, that is used. And the thought was that in some sense, among those who had it, is that you give a give out the quantitative, and then you can have a bit of more latitude in explaining why the quantitative are the way they are and putting information around them. But some people were a bit uncomfortable with leaving it at the discretion of management, probably essentially for two reasons. One is that perhaps some managers might behave opportunistically and not disclose what they really ought to disclose. And secondly, there is also just a general concern with comparability across entities. So I think if I go through, and then on the very last item, which was the future payments to members of defined benefit plans that are closed to new members, the thought was that this was valuable and useful, and to that they would like the expected future cash payments that are dealing with deficits broken out. But they thought that this probably didn't warrant a separate objective, and it could be folded into one of the other specific objectives. And now I will invite my group members to fill in my deficiencies, please.
Okay, thanks, Tom. Obviously, you had not any deficiencies on your...
No, I have polite group members.
I think it was a good summary of the discussions in the group.
That's good.
That is said.
Oh, I apologize. I did leave out one item that I thought was interesting. Could I just come back for a second, Martin?
Yes, please.
Yeah, the one item I thought was an interesting observation was that in thinking about whether to move some non-mandatory into mandatory, one alternative put forward was that we could provide additional guidance on when the non-mandatories would be useful. And that might, if we are going to leave it in the non-mandatory class, that would hopefully help preparers make better judgments about when to exclude or include a specific non-mandatory item. So I just wanted to add that too, because I left it out, sorry.
Good, thanks, Tom. Any additions? Seems not to be the case, then let's move to the last group, Tadeo.
Thank you, Martin.
Thank you, Martin.
Our group discussed IFRS 13, fair value measurement. We divided the discussion into four. The first one is in terms of assets and liabilities in each level of the fair value hierarchy. A first general comment that the terms, and this is definitely applicable for all sessions, I believe, that the term widely mandatory disclosure may need the time to people understand the message that it does not mean the information is not required. It's just the way that you provide this information. I think that it was kind of starting point. As in the group that were, I think that mentioned, Nick mentioned that one, there will be many discussion with auditors, especially in the beginning of the application of the proposal. This was also the general feeling in our group. And for this first talk, also a general perception that came up from the group was that the importance of the disaggregation to get it right, not only by class of assets and liabilities in the balance sheet, but understand information, for example, on geographical or geographical area, industry. This would be, for example, very relevant for equity investment. This would be also desirable information. And there are some questions whether the way that the disclosure requirements are proposed, it will capture that one. Again, some level of disaggregation is more important than the classification between level 1, 2, and 3. And then it was a very strong comment. I mean, that in the end of the day, it's just information about what is relevant. In my view, I think that we got the right answer, because in the end of the day, when we get read in some parts of the proposal from the distinction between level 1, 2, and 3, this is exactly what we are trying to do. Also, there were some comments that it affects more financial institutions, these proposals, than industry. But we hopefully we believe that the materiality exercise will probably help the right balance of information needed, especially when we look from the cost perspective for preparers, and then we get believe that it will get right. The second item we discussed was measurement uncertainties. And then at this point, there were mixed view on whether the, because we got rid from the sensitive analysis, and then some said that whether it would be not so relevant, but at the same time, it might be useful for starting the conversation with management. Also was mentioned that in some cases, regulators asks for stress scenario. Stress scenarios, and then this kind of information might be helpful in some cases. But at this point, it is clear that users want more information, that in the end of the day, just saying that or maybe these or that information would be better. We gave some examples, and then we hope that it will be helpful in the proposal. But it seems that users want, as expected, more, and preparers say that it's difficult to achieve. They will always ask for more information, and I agree with that. There was a general agreement, basically, in relation to the other two topics, the reasonably possible alternative fair value measurement, and in relation to the reasons for change between levels and the fair value from period to another. I don't know, Catherine, if you want to add any additional comment.
Yes, I can do, Tadia. So on that last point about measurement uncertainty, I think a sense that came through quite strongly off from the group for me was about the fact that in times of crisis, stuff in level three is going to cause investors some worries, and there was a debate around, you know, what exactly could the board describe require that would meet those needs in every circumstance, and some in the room felt that in those cases there would be a need for companies and investors to be talking directly to each other for the investors to get everything that they needed. So that came through quite strongly. I think I would add that on the very last objective that we discussed, there was a bunch of agreement coming through there on the value of knowing about the movements, the reconciliation and transfers between levels was highlighted by the users as something that was very important. The users agreed that reconciliation should be mandatory, and one of the preparers in the room agreed that the proposals there looked reasonable. I think that's everything I would add.
I don't know whether any member that our group would like to add something. Thank you, Kathy. Our group was very shy. Sometimes they were not, but sometimes they are.
No, I think it's a good summary. Thank you.
Okay, then thank you, Tadir. Thank you, Catherine. And I think this will finalize our meeting for today. Thank you very much for all your thoughtful comments. Thank you for the staff for preparing this meeting. Thank you for the ISP members sharing the breakout sessions. And tomorrow at 11 UK time, we will have another meeting, which is a management commentary. Have all a good rest of the day, and see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.